During his tenure with the Los Angeles Dodgers, Ned Colletti had the highest winning percentage of any GM in the National League. In his new book, The Big Chair, he lets readers in on the real GM experience from his unique vantage point, sharing the inner workings of three of the top franchises in sport. Ned Colletti is the former GM of the Los Angeles Dodgers, where he had a widely successful tenure from 2006 to 2014. Before the Dodgers, he served as the general manager of the San Francisco Giants after getting his start with the Chicago Cubs, his beloved home team. He currently appears as a baseball analyst for Spectrum Sportsnet, and he is there before and after most Dodgers games, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Ned Colletti to the roundtable this morning. Ned, thank you very much for being with us. What a pleasure.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on. One tiny correction there. I was the assistant GM in San Francisco.
That's right.
Always utmost respect for Brian Sabian in the big seat there.
Assistant. And at what point, and you write about this, and it's a great story, but at what point did you know you were ready to take the big chair?
I think about halfway through my Giants tenure. I was with the Cubs for 13 years and about maybe 4 or 5 years into the Giants 11-year run. Excuse me. I thought it was a possibility, and thankfully for working with Brian Sabian, there was not a territorial issue where he would not help and teach and also open up different avenues for me that maybe other assistant GMs didn't have the opportunity to do. When I got to L.A., my first trade was not my first trade. My first free agent signing was not my first free agent signing because Brian had allowed me to do some of that under his guidance and with his final say, be able to do that in the job before I got to the big chair.
At what point do you, as you say, when you get the big chair, do you even realize, I mean, you've been the assistant for a while, when you get there and you're with this organization, do you realize or have any full understanding of all that that job entails?
I think you have a pretty good view, but you bring up a great point. Until you're in it, You don't really understand the scope of it or the depth of it. And as Brian would tell me all the time, much of what we do is almost crisis management. And you know, you think about the GM, they get to make trades, they get to watch all the games, you think about all the glorious spots of it. But the people management is full-time, and the depth of it is full-time. And where you sit in that chair, you have ownership that you're responsible to. You have a fan base that you're responsible to. You have employees that work for you, sort of, or at least next to you, and some next to you, some for you, some above you. And the amount of times you find yourself dealing with different situations because of who you're dealing with and their positions, their accountability, their responsibilities, it's wide-ranging. And until you have a chance to do it, you can kind of guess what it's going to be like, but doing it and is so far different and so much more complex than just watching it that it's remarkable.
So let's take a couple steps back. You grow up in the city of Chicago. You breathe, sleep, and sweat the Chicago Cubs, and you love the team. You love baseball. And when you get to work in baseball, you get to work for the Chicago Cubs. What is that experience like?
That was a tremendous blessing for me in an otherwise very, very tumultuous and heartbreaking time in my life. I was in my mid-20s, and I grew up in Chicago, as you say, and then I moved to Philadelphia, and I was covering the National Hockey League, the Philadelphia Flyers. As soon as I get there, my dad gets sick. My dad's 49 years old at the time, develops lung cancer. My mom had never driven a car, had a brother in college. I was the first in my family ever to go to college. My brother was a second. We've got tons of cousins and aunts and uncles and all that. So I'm in Philly, and we decided to start a family because my dad's not going to be around for a long time.
Right.
And so we decided we would try and present him with a grandchild before he died. So in 1981, in September, we buy a duplex that had 18% interest attached to the mortgage, kind of a high number in today's world. And my wife is pregnant. She's about to give birth in another 4 weeks. And we move in, and about 2 weeks, 3 weeks later, I lose my job. Philadelphia Journal, folds. So now we have no income. I've got this massive mortgage because of the interest rate. My dad's dying in Chicago, 800 miles to the west. My mom had never, as I said, never drove a car, so she's trying to figure out how to see the love of her life and how to get through all the trials and tribulations of seeing someone you love start to die. And the Cubs called me. Dallas Green was their general manager. He gave me a call. Bob Ibach was a PR director with the Cubs. He had worked with me in Philadelphia. He kind of knew the precarious spot my family and I were in, and so they offered me a chance to come home. And so it really did a bunch of great things for me. It allowed me, first and foremost, to come home and to be with my mom and to help her out, let my brother stay in college, and for me to spend the last 4 months of my dad's life by his side. Also gave him a chance to see his only grandchild he'd ever see. Gave me a chance to support my mom. Gave me a chance to start a career that is now 36 years in the making in Major League Baseball. So through the darkest clouds and the things that really tested me probably the most, especially as somebody in their mid-20s, came a lot of blessings out of a tragedy.
And obviously there's the personal aspect to it, but there has to be the kid in the candy store aspect of it too, that you are working and get to work at Wrigley with the team that you grew up admiring so deeply.
No doubt. I mean, it was, and I say this completely candidly and honestly, that it, going to a ballpark every day for 35, 36 years to earn a living has never been lost on me.
Yeah.
To take the drive up Addison Street, or sometimes I would take Irving Park, which is the busy exchange, four blocks to the north of Wrigley Field. Pulling up to 1060 West Addison Street, it's always a thrill to me. Today, when I would go and watch the other teams I've been with or go to the series last year, I always know the preciousness of that opportunity and the gift that I've been given. Same with Candlestick Park in San Francisco, although a little bit less friendly than Wrigley Field, a little bit of a tougher venue as far as weather went.
Right.
And then, of course, the beautiful ballpark they built on the bay, and then Dodger Stadium. And you know, I teach at Pepperdine now, and I made the comment the other day, Pepperdine in Malibu, beautiful campus, maybe the prettiest campus in the country. The places, the windows I've looked out of to make a living after living in a garage the first 5 years of my life, that's not lost on me either.
Yeah. Los Angeles Dodgers, I think that park doesn't always get the due that it deserves. It is a beautiful place to see a baseball game.
It is magnificent. And when you live in L.A. and you see how the city is laid out, and you can stand at the top deck and you can see the city of Los Angeles, this skyline that is becoming broader and broader as years go by. You see that, the brightness of L.A., the bright lights of L.A., and then you can stand in the same spot and just turn and look to center field and see the San Gabriel Mountains and the beauty that's of nature and all these trees in this almost forest-like area that sits right behind Dodger Stadium, and the parking lot is this beautiful terrain with the mountains as the backdrop. And it's located about a mile or two from the heart of downtown L.A. Magnificent place to put a ballpark, and the foresight of the O'Malley's and the city of Los Angeles people from 1962 to have it go this long in such a pristine location and kept up as beautifully as it's been kept up by all ownerships. It is a historic landmark in the history of sports and in the American culture.
You write quite candidly about your relationship with the owners who brought you to the Dodgers, Frank and Jamie McCourt, pretty much saying that relationship is very nuanced. How do you describe that relationship?
It was a tremendous learning experience. Both very, very smart, very, very savvy business people, and a different type of ownership because it was family-owned. Family ownership had kind of fallen out of the sports world for a while. A lot of corporations. Right. My first job in Chicago was Tribune Company Corporate. Giants were a combination of many corporate leaders in San Francisco, and then a family ownership. And so it had a different feel to it immediately. But even starting with the interview process, I realized that they were both very, very intelligent. They were relentless. They had a lot of questions. They needed a lot of answers. And that they were gonna continue to challenge thought process, which I found to be healthy. I found it to be a healthy exchange. Did I agree with everything all the time? Of course not. I don't think anybody always agrees with a boss's thoughts on things. I think it's kind of normal in the course of everyday business, but always respectful. And I learned a lot. There's a lot of things that I would replicate, a lot of things I would take with me, a lot of things I would never, ever do, because that's part of management, too, and part of life. But it was a very educational experience for me. And when they went through the darkest period of time with the divorce and then a bankruptcy, it taught me a valuable lesson. It taught me a lesson, and it taught me that there's only so many things in life that you're going to be able to change and positively affect. And to be true to yourself, to understand what those are, is very important. Because I could have wasted a lot of time, because I was asked almost daily about their divorce and how that was affecting the team. I was asked almost daily a few months later about the bankruptcy and how that was affecting the team. Did it affect the team? May have, may not have. But I couldn't really concentrate on a divorce or on a bankruptcy. I had to make the team as good as I could make it, no matter what the dynamics were. Joe Torre had to manage the team and had to manage it as good as he could, despite if the roster was short or long or highly financed or not. Same with Don Mattingly, who replaced Joe.
Right.
And I think that one of the great lessons in life is really to kind of focus in on what you can affect and let rumor, gossip, innuendo, all the other noise that circulates all of us every day, you got to put that to the side. I didn't have time to put on the stuff I had no control over.
When you look at, and obviously you write about this and beautifully, but what mark do you think, what legacy do you think you left, a personal mark that you left on the Dodgers during your tenure as GM?
That's a tough question to have, I think, anybody answer their own. I think legacy is probably what other people will view. I would hope that they viewed me as somebody who cared.
Yep.
Who worked at trying to make the organization as good as I could every single day, and as a good man, as somebody that did what he could for the community. There's a lot of community groups here I work with, a lot of young people that were like me growing up, needed somebody to believe in, somebody to mentor, somebody to help them financially from time to time. I've helped dozens of young people in this city kind of figure it out. I stay in touch with them now. They've gone on from high school careers, not knowing if they were ever going to go to school, to graduating from great universities, to being leaders in the city. And they go back into their neighborhoods and they help. So I think the mentoring aspect and the part of I never gave up. I never gave up trying to make this franchise as good as I could make it every single day I was here. I think I would hope that would be the legacy. Well, we're always successful? No, you're never always going to be successful.
Yeah.
But our purpose and our process we thought was at the utmost, and that's all you can really do is what you have control over. Everything I could control and everything I could figure out, and again, it's an imperfect science when you're dealing with people. We did the ultimate best we could.
Meanwhile, tomorrow night, L.A. Dodgers against the Arizona Diamondbacks for the Division Series. What do you think?
Boy, it's going to be exciting. I know this team, the Dodger team, has waited since probably the last out in Chicago at Wrigley Field last October,
right,
for this series to start. They've been waiting. They've been planning for this. You go into spring training I went to spring training this year, and I saw a different attitude, a different approach. A lot of fun, a lot of great guys, a lot of guys enjoying each other's company and playing hard. But I saw a different approach to what this season meant. And now they're going to get a chance to get there and do it. In the meantime, you got Arizona, a really good team, tremendously gifted, especially offensively. And they got a rivalry. They're like the team in the desert versus the Hollywood team, you know, the Dodgers,
right,
the L.A. team. And so the rivalry is there, especially from their side. I think it's going to be a very, very exciting series. How it's going to go, can't predict that. Dodgers have probably more pitching than AZ. AZ's got an offensive club, though, that will not quit. Look at that lineup. There is not one place as a pitcher where you could say, well, at least these two spots here, we're going to be a little bit more efficient with our pitches because we got to work a little bit less hard. Doesn't exist. They are loaded.
And it's been a long time since 1988.
Yes, it has. Yes, it has.
The book is a delight. It's called The Big Chair, The Smooth Hops and Bad Bounces from the Inside World of the Acclaimed Los Angeles Dodgers General Manager, Ned Coletti. A great pleasure. Thank you very much for being with us. Have a great time covering the rest of the season, and very nice to have you on the program.
Hey, thank you so much for the time today, and also great conversation with you.
Thank you very much, Ned. I appreciate it. Thank you. Again, the name of the book, The Big Chair, published by Putnam. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.